Welcome to the Healthcare IT Today interview series. We feel lucky to be able to talk to so many smart, passionate, and knowledgeable people in healthcare. Now, we're taking our favorite interviews and sharing them with you. So sit back, relax, and enjoy perspectives on the world of health IT.
Hey everyone, I'm John Lynn, the founder and chief editor at Healthcare IT Today. We're excited to bring you another in our series of interviews with top leaders in health IT. And our guest today is Dr. Raviv Prailuk. He's CEO and co-founder at Phase V. Welcome, Raviv.
Thank you. It's great being here.
Yeah, I love that you're coming to us all the way from Israel, a place that I fell in love with a long time ago. But so excited to have you here and share about the work you're doing. So tell us a little bit about yourself and Phase V.
Great. So I'm an engineer by training. I have a PhD in computational and neuroscience, spent many years in leading multidisciplinary engineering teams. And then I switched a few years ago to biotech, and I've learned to know the challenges in clinical trials. And when we decided, me and my co-founder, to found a company, immediately we were ideating for quite some time, and immediately when we landed on clinical trials, we said, okay, that's exactly what we want to solve. This is a big problem, can make a positive impact, and we felt that experiments is something that we feel comfortable from other things that we did previously. So we founded Phase V. We are headquartered in Boston, actually. The R&D is in Tel Aviv. We have a multidisciplinary team of software engineers, machine learning engineers, data scientists, but also physicians and biologists, because we truly believe that the multidisciplinary approach is the right one. So I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I think it is interesting to see the evolution of clinical trials, and especially the way AI and machine learning are impacting that. How do you see AI and machine learning transforming how we do clinical trials today?
Yeah, so I think maybe it's important to start with the challenges, right? So clinical trials are the longest and most expensive part of drug development. There is high failure rates, a lot of inefficiencies, and we all today acknowledge that the next frontier is going to be precision medicine. So this is creating even more burden on recruitment. So we are trying to recruit patients that are more specific. So these are maybe few out of many challenges that are existing today in clinical trials. And I believe that machine learning and AI are perfectly positioned in order to solve these challenges. From the design of the trial throughout the conduct of the trial up to the analysis. And tools that developed in other tech domains for designing and conducting experiments are perfectly positioned, obviously with some unique modifications, because we are talking about patients and there's regulation that we need to respect and there are other uniqueness, but despite that, a lot of achievements can be leveraged towards solving the challenges in clinical trials.
You talk about trial design. What are some examples where the trial design causes the clinical trial to fail? Because, you know, obviously, if the clinical trial fails, then you're back to the starting board in a lot of ways. So give us some examples of where that, you know, the trial design ends up leading to a failure.
So usually in clinical trials, let's talk about a clinical trial of a drug. You're trying to show that your drug is superior, is better than standard of care or placebo. And what you're doing, you are planning the sample size, the number of patients that you want to recruit in order to show that indeed this is the case. And usually you plan the sample size in order to gain a specific power, a probability of showing that indeed your drug is working. And in many cases, you don't know exactly the parameters in order to define the sample size. So you plan to recruit 300 patients, and by the end of the trial, and it takes many years and a lot of time and effort, and it's very expensive, you actually realize that you were underpowered. The sample size, the number of patients that you recruited weren't enough. This is devastating. So this is one example of a design failure that caused the trial to fail. It actually can happen also on the other way around, that you are recruiting too much patients and wasting a lot of time and money. Other examples, in any trial, you have an endpoint. Endpoint is the clinical parameter that you want to measure in order to show that indeed your drug is working. In type 2 diabetes, for example, it can be a measure of HbA1c or glucose. You want to show that you're reducing this level. So in cancer, it can be overall survival or the size of the tumor. So choosing the right endpoint is a very important thing that you need to do in the design. But if you are not choosing the right endpoint, it can cause failure. And maybe last example would be the patient subpopulation. So you assume that your drug is working on all comers, but today we understand that most of the drugs are working only on subset of patients. It can be demographics, genomics, metabolics, and any other features that subset patients. But if you are not choosing the inclusion-exclusion rightly, it can cause a trial to fail.
Interesting. And how are you using ML to address some of these trial design issues before they become an issue, right? It's interesting. You talked about testing use cases. Talk more about how you're using this ML to address these issues.
Yeah, so we've built a platform that is starting from the design of the trial. So the platform, software-based, leveraging machine learning, allows you to take as an input the high-level parameters, including the uncertainty, because at the end of the day, it's all about uncertainty, right? You don't know all the parameters. So you are taking the uncertainty into account, and then you simulate with a lot of simulations. You can simulate thousands or millions or hundreds of millions of scenarios, and you're trying to illustrate or envision what's going to happen in the future. And with machine learning today, you can do it quite efficiently. So the first step is that we're trying to help the sponsor to envision how the trial is going to look like. And then we are sort of mapping the space and telling the sponsor, this is a very risky place. Avoid those types of parameters. This is very promising place. You should focus more on that. And this is helping in order to define the parameters and writing the protocol. The first step that we are taking is go, no go. Choosing the right parameters, high level speaking, and then we are deep diving into the detailed design. And then the same platform, after you have the protocol, the FDA or the EMA approved your protocol, you start the trial. The main difference that adaptive trials that we are working on are bringing compared to fixed design is that you are leveraging the accumulating data. You're not waiting till the end of the trial to discover that the sample size wasn't right, that the inclusion-exclusion wasn't right, that the endpoint wasn't right. You're actually measuring a lot of parameters during the trial and updating your understanding about the world and then changing the way you behave. You can change the drug regime. You can change arms. You can change doses. And by that, you're increasing dramatically your probability of success, reducing inefficiencies, and that's how we are leveraging software, machine learning, and data in order to overcome some of these challenges.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, for those of us that love sports, we've seen this in the analysis of sports and who's going to win and all of these simulations, yeah. Right, of tournaments, et cetera, right? How many times would they win in percentages? So it's interesting to see it applied to clinical trials. How effective is machine learning in these processes at, you know, avoiding failures? And what's the key to making it effective?
Yeah, so before taking this question, I want to refer to what you just said about sports. Yeah, that's a great example. I want to give maybe another example. I like Waze or Google Maps, right? Uh-huh. So if you think about it, you know, before Waze and Google Maps, we were using maps. You know, we had a plan. We want to drive to a certain place, and then we had a route. Today, most of us are using those types of apps in order to adapt during the course of drive based on information, based on the accumulating data, traffic, and maybe other parameters that are updating throughout our drive. And similarly, that's exactly what we are doing in clinical trials, where trials are more dynamic and adaptive. And there are many, many examples. You can think about gaming and marketing and public transportation. All of these fields were revolutionized by bringing software and machine learning and making the experiments more dynamic.
That's a great
example.
That really is a great example. And, you know, especially with traffic in Israel, and I mean, Waze is an Israeli company, but no, I had that happen to me. I was driving somewhere and my sister was in the back seat and she was backseat driving. She said, "John, shouldn't you turn right?" And I look at her and I look at Google Maps and I said, "Yeah, I could. It's 1 minute slower. Do you want me to do that?"
Like, you felt so great. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, if it would happen with mother-in-law, it's even better. Okay, so how we are measuring efficiency and effectiveness? So first of all, again, referring back to the challenges. So we have a challenge of sample size, hence cost and time to market. So we can measure ourselves and actually reducing inefficiency. So adaptive trials in some cases can reduce sample size by 30, 40, and 50%. This is a lot. Clinical trial can cost tens of millions and sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars, and cutting 50% in costs, it means a lot. But in some cases, it's even more than that. Time to market can, you know, make the difference for pharma companies. If you are best in class and first in class, it can change the way that your drug is being perceived in the market. And last but not least, I think the most important parameter is the quality of the study and probability of success. Because what adaptive trials is allowing you is to actually to test whether the biology is working or not, to do it fast, but more accurately. And machine learning and software is exactly what's allowing to do things more efficiently and at scale. One of the challenges is that if you think about it, Waze and Google Maps, now let's take this example again, if we need to do it manually, so we need to have a lot of people that are involved in the process and are calling us and telling us, "Oh, listen, there's a block here and a traffic jam here and there." But once software and machine learning come into the play, we can scale it and each one of us can use a cell phone and to navigate by their own. And this is exactly the platform that we've built in order to allow sponsors, and by sponsors, we mean clinical teams as a whole, the biostatisticians, clean ops, commercial, and clinical leads who are sitting together and trying to make very complex decisions to have the best point of view on the trial as a whole and to make informed decisions.
Do you sometimes see where the ML kind of goes through the analysis and it says this clinical trial isn't working, you should stop it? Like, is that a potential outcome as well, where before you spend hundreds of millions on the clinical trial, you stop and you say, this isn't going where we think it should go?
Yeah, definitely. The professional term is stop for futility, and group sequential design is a type of adaptive trial that is exactly doing that. And MSD, Merck, many years ago implemented stop for futility in many clinical trials. And by that, they reduced dramatically time to market, reduced cost, and actually positioned themselves better in order to win competition. We are working very closely with someone who was heading the biostatistics at Merck back then. And he told us about, you know, the unbelievable value that just that, just stopping for futility brought. So you are 100% right.
Interesting. You know, there was another interesting thing on your website that I found really fascinating, and that is something you call causal ML, causal machine learning. What's the difference between, ML in general and this causal ML?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So, first of all, causal ML is a fusion of two things. So, it's a fusion between causal inference and machine learning. Causal inference versus or correlation versus causation, this is a very important distinction because in many cases in statistics or in data science in general, we are finding correlations. We are identifying that older people are more prone to die, right? This is correlation. But then, and that's true, right? But then you seek for causation. You want to get signals that are causing people to die. And once you are finding the causal mechanism, you can act upon. And if you think about it, in clinical trials, this is exactly what you're looking for. You really want to know what are the features of patients that are causing them to respond to the treatment versus those that are not responding? Not just correlation, because if it's a correlation, maybe it hidden some underlying mechanism, and we are out for the true mechanism of action. So this is about causation. But what's very complex about causation is that finding causation is extremely or quite heavily computation in order to find the exact causation mechanism. And machine learning in the past 5 to 10 years brought cutting-edge techniques in order to answer and address these questions. So we are bringing these fusions of techniques that came from other domains, from econometrics and from marketing, and we are tuning them very accurately to the space of clinical trials. And this allows us very accurately to outperform all other algorithms that are out there in order to answer, for example, which subpopulation of patients are responding to the treatment. In cases that the drug is not working for the entire population, we can very accurately identify the subsets of patients that are responding. It can help us to find surrogate endpoints and so on and so forth. So this is a very important part of our role. And I would add, we are really up for interpretable machine learning algorithms. So interpretable versus black box, this is again a very important distinction in my mind. There are a lot of algorithms that it's a black box. You don't understand what's happening behind the scenes. And if you're dealing with clinical trials, you have regulator and clinical leads, and for a right reason, they want to understand what's happening. They don't want to follow a black box that just tells them that feature number 4 and 15, this is the right way to go. And there's another reason. It's not that the comfort of people, but because it increases generalizability. So in clinical trials, we have phases. We have phase 1, phase 2, phase 3, and then eventually we want the drug to work in market, in real life. And what we found is that applying interpretable models, interpretable machine learning models, increase dramatically the chances of generalizability. And for us, this is a very important aspect of the work that we are doing, because at the end of the day, we want to help sponsors to cure patients, not just to do a cool science that, we are plotting graphs and we feel cool with ourselves. We really want to help them to cure patients.
Interesting. You made an interesting comment about kind of unique populations within the subset. Health equity is such a big topic, right? And diversity of populations and specializing the treatments to different populations. How do you see that, kind of health equity issue? Do you think that this machine learning technology is going to improve that situation and provide treatments that are specific to, even maybe populations that haven't had treatments before? Or do you think it's gonna the data is so skewed to certain populations that it's not going to? I mean, talk to us about health equity and how that plays a role in what you're doing.
So first of all, I think that health equity is not just an issue of ethical considerations or justice. I do think it's also a better way to develop drugs. Because at the end of the day, if you're developing drug for the wrong subset of patients, you're going to lose from even financial standpoint. And there's an interplay between the two. And definitely machine learning, and specifically causal machine learning, is perfectly positioned in order to increase dramatically health equity. And it starts from analyzing data. We are capable today to quickly analyze and in high accuracy, large subsets of data. And let's reanalyze data. Let's leverage the data that already accumulated and see previous drugs, previous mechanism of actions, previous disease indications, what we can learn in order to choose there's in probability, there's prior and posterior. The trials that conducted in the past are the prior for the trials that are going to conduct in the future. So let's leverage the data, and for that we created the data lake with many, many patients in order to make a better and informed decision. And then we can say, okay, this drug should be focused on males versus females and vice versa, on young versus adults and vice versa, and so on and so forth. And then while the trial is ongoing, there is a framework in clinical trials that we call adaptive enrichment. Let's enrich the subsets of patients that the drug is working for them versus let's recruit less for those that it's not working. And in some cases, it means that we are going to recruit more females. In other cases, it means that we are going to recruit more patients with high BMI and so on and so forth. But eventually what it's going to create is sort of like evolution. Each drug is going to find the right subsets of patients who need it the most. And by that, I truly believe that it's going to increase dramatically health equity for many patients who need these drugs.
Interesting. Interesting perspective. It's a complicated topic and an important one. You know, I saw you announced a partnership with investment acquisition organization. Talk to us about some of the novel ways or partnerships that illustrate what Phase V's technology, how it can be used to enhance other organizations as well.
Yeah, so I would say that we have, roughly speaking, four types of partners or customers, if you wish. So one is big pharmaceutical companies. We are providing either retrospective or prospective services. The second is biotech, and there's slightly different business models for big pharma and biotech. The third is CROs, clinical research organizations. They are taking most of the lift of the operational work of clinical trials, and we are empowering them to do their work more efficiently and effectively. And last but not least, are more financial investments who are actually trying to make informed decisions of how to allocate or invest money. And if you think about our retrospective and prospective offering, it can help them dramatically, both in order to decide which drugs are going to work, because if we're doing retrospective analysis, we can see value using the causal machine learning that others can't, but also in thinking about what's going to be the cost and time to market of drugs, because we can design and simulate the future. So those collaborations are a bit newer to us, but we find them very beneficial. And I believe that our partners find them beneficial as well.
Interesting. Well, I think, we're still early, which is weird to say because AI and, ML has been around for a few decades, but it still feels early in what we're going to be able to do. What do you see as kind of next for Phase V?
Yeah, so I'll say modestly that we are super excited about what we are doing. Just working with sponsors and CROs and investors in order to increase their efficiency and effectiveness in bringing treatments to patients. What I see next is just doing it more and more and to increase our penetration to the market and to invite more sponsors to be more efficient and to leverage the technology that is out there Yeah, and our vision is that really any patient on earth can leverage the technology that we are trying to bring to sponsor. And there are so many diseases that are still, you know, without cure today. And it's one thing to develop the biology and the drug. This is extremely important. But if we really want to make exponential change, we need to change the way clinical trials are being designed and conducted. And I do believe that phase V is well positioned in order to lead this change.
Wow. Yeah, I heard someone interestingly write an article. When they were a doctor, they thought they'd get to medicine and there would be all these protocols and approaches to solve whatever health issue there is. And he became a doctor and realized, wait, there's not. There are for certain situations, but for a lot of them, there's not. So I think we need to accelerate the science behind it. So Raviv, this was really interesting, and it was fun to learn about phase V and everything you're doing. So thanks so much for taking time to share your insights and perspectives. And thanks everyone for watching and listening. If you want to find more great healthcare IT content like this, be sure to check it out at healthcareittoday.com or search for Healthcare IT Today on your favorite podcasting applications. Thanks, Raviv.
Thank you. It was great talking to you. Very interesting discussion.